Wednesday, March 14th, 2007. We have three bills set for public hearing today, and the agenda says possible work session, but really it was never intended that they would come to work session today. Rather, we need to focus ourselves on gathering information about an important public policy issue, which is the number of non-citizens who are in our jails and our state prisons. And I'd like to have, I'm going to be opening a public hearing on all three of these bills together, so I will do that now. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2868, House Joint Memorial 8, and House Joint Memorial 20. And I'll ask Council Taylor to give us a brief summary of all three of the bills.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2868 comes to you from Representative Edwards, Clement, and Roblin. It requires the Attorney General to take all necessary steps to pursue reimbursement from the federal government for all costs incurred by the state by reason of the incarceration of the illegal aliens in the state. Chairman of the Committee, HJM 8, comes to you sponsored by Representative Flores and Thatcher. What it does is urges Congress to reimburse Oregon for the millions of dollars it spends annually to incarcerate illegal immigrants within its prisons and jail for the commission of crimes in Oregon. HJM 20 comes to you from Representative Lim, memorializes the President of the United States in the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States concerning the expenses to Oregon taxpayers for incarcerating criminal immigrants who have committed crimes in Oregon and are in the United States illegally, and how if they are returned to their home countries to serve the remainder of the sentence, they would be closer to families and friends. Urges the Attorney General of the United States to return illegal immigrants serving time in Oregon prisons to their home countries.
Thank you, Council. I'd now like to invite Representative Clem and Representative Galizio, who are sponsors of House Bill 2868, to make some introductory comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Larry Galizio, House District 35. And somebody said brevity is the soul of wit, so we'll try to follow that maxim. This last campaign cycle, when I was knocking on doors and talking to people in House District 35, I was struck by the number of people who were concerned about the costs that Oregonians were incurring for jailing and putting through the judicial system illegal immigrants. And it was very, very just a lot of people were talking about it, and I was quite struck. And so House Bill 2868 directs the Oregon's Attorney General to take all necessary steps to secure reimbursement from the federal government for costs incurred by Oregon taxpayers related to the incarceration of illegal immigrants. I think everyone agrees that the federal government is primarily responsible for immigration, and they've largely, quite frankly, dropped the ball. And so this is one attempt to get the attention, make certain that the federal government understands that this is an issue that really needs to be dealt with, and that Oregon taxpayers are frustrated and believe that the costs they're incurring for the federal failure is such that requires reimbursement. So that's what the bill tries to do.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. Representative Clem, do you have anything to add?
Just a couple points. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Clem, State Representative for Central and East Salem. And I think, like my colleague here, while canvassing door-to-door and telephone calls towards the end in the rainy weather, people bring up their issues, and immigration was certainly one of the top things that I heard about. And what you find when you're trying to think it through is that you have to find some practical solutions on how to deal with this, because we aren't the federal government, and you know, we're not responsible for the border between different countries and our ports. So this is one practical measure that we've used in other issue areas where our Attorney General has participated in lawsuits and efforts to collect funds on behalf of expenses Oregon taxpayers have made. And I think this is a smart way to do it, which is to say, for those who are here illegally and commit crimes, the people do not want to pay in Oregon just because the federal government can't get its house in order. So we've said take whatever means necessary to try and get compensation so the folks of Oregon aren't subsidizing the incarceration costs of people who have broken two laws.
Good. Any questions for these representatives? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. And it's more of a question to you. Is somebody from the Attorney General's office here to testify about the authority?
Okay. Yes, we do have that covered within the witness list.
Then I don't have any questions for my colleagues. Thank you.
Representative Barton.
In Oregon, there's laws that essentially prohibit local police from inquiring about the immigration status. And I know in Portland, years ago, we used to assist then immigration, now they're called something else, and we would actually set up, like, block an area off, and they'd come sweep through, and the immigration authorities would check people's status. We're no longer, Portland police are no longer allowed to do that. Other police are no longer allowed. Do you think that might help this process if law enforcement in Oregon was allowed to work with the federal authorities in checking immigration status?
I can take a shot. I have no idea if it would help the process of getting people who are illegally found and deported. I know that, you know, a weird twist of logic, it would increase the cost of Oregon, actually, probably, in the incarceration arena, because you potentially, if it worked the way you're describing, might end up with more people in jail. So this bill is even more urgently needed then, because we'll have more expenses that the state of Oregon taxpayers have to pay and need compensation for.
Okay, just as a follow-up, what would happen in those days, they would gather enough to fill a bus. They had immigration buses. They would then charge the people that had been picked up out of their pocket and then drive them back down to Mexico. But thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with what we're trying to do, but I think you're hitting a very small part of it. And we need to be concerned about the victims of these crimes that these people are committing and, of course, the associated cost that they have. I think we should be concerned about the social programs and the education costs that we're incurring that take those monies away from Oregonians that are here illegally. I think there's jobs issues that we should be concerned about. Oregon doesn't ask, as Representative Parker said, we can't ask. Police officers can't ask the question when you have a good reason to believe. And even in the cigarette tax bill, the Healthy Kids bill, it prohibited the state workers from asking whether or not they were legal or not. Oregon is promoting this ourselves, and we better take care of Oregon before we start pointing the finger at the federal government.
If there are no further questions, then I'll excuse these two representatives. Thank you,
thank you very much
for bringing this bill forward. And we have chief sponsors of one of the other proposals here, which is House Joint Memorial 8, Representative Flores and Representative Thatcher. Come forward, please.
No doubt about that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm State Representative for House District 51. And I am in accord with my colleagues who testified previously on House Bill, the prior House Bill, in that the focus of this House Joint Memorial 8 is we do believe that the federal government has dropped the ball on the illegal immigration issue. Basically, House Joint Memorial 8 asked Congress and the President of the United States to reimburse Oregon for the cost of housing illegal immigrants in our prison system. Currently, Oregon pays approximately 84% of the cost, and the federal government picks up only 14% of the tab. Through the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, Oregon and other states and other states get grants to cover some of the costs of incarcerating illegal immigrants. This program has many strings attached, and there is a complicated formula for figuring out how to get that money. And no, the feds don't make it easy. For example, and just as one small example, an inmate has to be in custody for at least 4 days before they're calculated in any count. If you'll look at the numbers on the handout, as an example, we sampled just 1 day in the Oregon Department of Corrections, and that was February 6th of this year. There were over 1,000 inmates identified by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, also known as ICE, as being here illegally. That's nearly 10% of the entire prison population. At a daily cost of approximately $67 that per inmate, that pencils out to nearly $70,000 a day. For the most recent fiscal year, ending last July, the total cost to house all these illegal immigrants was approximately $34.5 million, yet the federal government only paid $4.5 million of that cost. We end up footing the bill for the remaining $30 million. And in another context, think how many teachers that would we could hire or how many state troopers we can put on the road with that kind of money. And the numbers are on the rise. Last fiscal year, there were nearly 1,900 illegal immigrants in state custody on any given day. And that figure is up 9% from the prior year. The relative cost is alarming, as Representative Krieger referenced. Our staff crunched some of the numbers, and using the average amount of a personal income tax paid by a family of four in the state of Oregon, around $2,800 a year. If you carry the one, you get a grand total. You would need all the income taxes paid by 12,000 middle-class Oregon families to equal the amount of money we spend warehousing illegal immigrants in our state each year. Approximately $34 million. Congress has been pressured to do more. In 2006, when they came to close to a deal on immigration reform on Capitol Hill, one of the bills that failed contained nearly $1 billion to help out the states. In fact, a year ago, a dozen governors from across the country, including Oregon, signed a petition to Congress urging full reimbursement for the cost of incarcerating illegal immigrants. And that was in the neighborhood of approximately $800 million. Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kim Thatcher. I'm representative for Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And thank you for listening to us today. I believe that county jails need our help too, and House Joint Memorial 8 addresses the cost to the state of Oregon, and we feel that the counties are included in that. In fact, the federal program does award some grant money to individual counties. In 2005, Washington County received $158,000, Marion County $172,000, Columbia County picked up $1,800, and Gilliam County was paid a whopping $596. These are just some examples. The counties get hit especially hard because, as Representative Flores mentioned, in order to receive the federal money, the offenders have to be behind bars for at least 4 days. Now, it may take 4 days for law enforcement to identify who they have in custody with aliases, alias names, and all that, but in many cases, the offenders aren't in custody for that long. And as you know, in many counties, there's a revolving door due to overcrowding, and a lot of these inmates don't count. They are often released before they even go through the booking process. In 2005, Multnomah County recorded 422 illegal immigrants. Cost for room and board, $1.3 million. But the feds only compensated the county for less than $300,000 of that expense. Other costs? Well, there's human costs as well. And many of these prisoners, once they reach the state system, are charged with very serious felonies, aggravated assault, rape, and other serious crimes. We're not obviously saying that all illegal immigrants are violent criminals. Most are like us and lead nonviolent and peaceful lives. However, there is a quality of life issue, and we're talking about an increased burden on state and local criminal justice systems. The petition the governors sent to Congress last year asking for more federal dollars summed it up best. They said, "These funds are critical to states such as ours and needed to at least partially offset the costs our taxpayers are bearing as a result of the failure to control illegal entries along our international borders. We need to send a message to Congress using House Joint Memorial 8. This would tell the decision makers in our nation's capital that the states can't keep footing this bill. This is a federal problem, and it requires a federal solution. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, representatives. Are there any questions for our colleagues? Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, thank you. Representative Flores, you at one time said that these numbers were a biennium. These are annual numbers, correct? The 34 million on this spreadsheet where it says total cost?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron. I would also add that House Bill 2868 and House Joint Memorial 8 are not in conflict with one another. If you would consider the fact that the Joint Memorial sends a strong message to Congress, if you think it in the context of an invoice and payment due, and the House bill gives our state's attorney general additional tools, kind of like going after the funding as a tax collector would or a bill collector would. So we embrace both of these bills in concept in trying to leverage the highest and best that we possibly can. And if I might address very quickly Representative Barker's concern regarding statutory authority for local police to be able to stop and inquire. Representative Thatcher and I also have a bill to address that. So we hopefully will be hearing from about that in the future.
I would like to add one more thing. Kim Thatcher for the record. I'm hearing that there's an amendment, potential amendment to replace the word alien with immigrant, and I think that may, especially in this case, really blur the lines between those who are here legally as legal immigrants and criminal aliens, which is what we're talking about here.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either one of you or both of you. For me, I'm just as disappointed in the Republicans as I am the Democrats or independents. I mean, the whole bunch of them back there.
Mr. Krieger.
Am I alone? I mean, I talk to a lot of my people in my district, and they're just throwing their hands up in there. And they kind of, it's the perception. Remember we talked about perception on the floor? It's the perception they got this time at the federal level that can't those people get together on anything? I hope that we don't allow ourselves to become as bad as it is in Washington, D.C., because I don't think we are. I think we are coming together here in Oregon.
Sounds like we are.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, and we agree with you.
Any further questions? Then thank you, Representatives.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming to present. We have, because we're in public hearing on all three of these measures, I'm going to just pick names from all three of these sign-up lists and take them in an order which will bring on people from an agency perspective first so we make sure we have the best development of information. So on that basis, I'm going to call Max Williams, the Director of the Department of Corrections, forward now.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure for the record, Max Williams, Director, Department of Corrections, and it's an honor for me to appear before you, particularly in this hearing room, and it's good to see so many of you here today. I was asked to come and just briefly comment on some of the details around the information involving the Department of Corrections and the number of criminal aliens and how this process that has been referred to, the SCAP funding, the Criminal Alien Assistance Program funding that was referenced by Representative Thatcher and Flores. And how that works for the Department of Corrections. And I'll try not to repeat much of the information because they shared with you information that was accurate with respect to the costs associated with the Department of Corrections for the housing of individuals. I do think it's important to sort of comment a little bit on what is referred to as the SCAP program and how that program works. The federal government appropriates typically in their annual budget a certain amount of money for all the states with respect to SCAP, and then there is an application process that all states go through to receive the amount of reimbursement. There doesn't seem to be much in the way of the relationship between the number of criminal aliens being housed in a jurisdiction and the total amount of funding that that Congress appropriates. Some agreement is ultimately reached as to how much of that funding is going to be made available, and then there's a formula that's applied that essentially distributes that funding among the states. And as you heard, the funding always is less than the overall cost associated with housing those individuals, and that's not only true for Oregon, but really true for every state across the country. The information that I provided to the committee assistant as I came up was a copy of a letter by Mr. Joe O'Leary, who's the governor's senior policy advisor for public safety. This letter, I believe, was also delivered this morning to your offices as well, but it states the governor's position on these bills and particularly references a Western Governors Association conference statement as to the policy of pursuing additional federal reimbursement for the housing of these individuals. I want to point out a little bit of the complexity with respect to how SCAP operates and clarify, I think, just a couple of points that are worthy of clarification. The first is SCAP does not base its determination on funding as to whether the individual you are housing is in the country legally or illegally. The formula is based on whether or not a person that you are holding in your institutions is in fact foreign-born. So an individual who is born in another country but is actually a naturalized citizen would count in the overall formula counting for how SCAP actually funds. The other point that I want to reference is that we often have people incarcerated in our system, both in jails and prisons in Oregon, who were in the country legally. They might have a legal right to be in the United States, but they still commit a crime. And as a result, they are deemed a criminal alien. One of the things you commit to when you come into the country legally is that you're going to abide by our laws. And so when you commit and are convicted of a crime, even if you were in the country legally, it often results at the end of your sentence in you being removed from the United States and returned to your country of origin. It's part of the contract you make when you come in and you operate with all the right documentation. So there are multiple categories of individuals who sort of fit into this box. And what essentially I think the federal government did was, instead of trying to make any determination around the legal status of these individuals, which the state doesn't have any authority to do, we're not in a position to determine the legal status of any of those individuals. That's a federal government determination done by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. They'll make the determination as to whether or not someone is in the country legally or not. We just simply report out on the number of individuals we're housing during the appropriate period, as Representative Flores pointed out, for 4 days or longer, who are actually foreign-born, and that's what the basis of the formula is then calculated on. There's little doubt, however, that regardless of that distinction, the formula reimburses us for substantially fewer bed days than what we're actually spending vis-a-vis this population. I think it's also important to note that the ICE, the Enforcement and Customs, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, does come in regularly and audit the records of the department, and then places what are called detainers, an order essentially that says we can't release an individual at the end of their sentence, but we are required to turn them over to ICE. They'll place detainers on individuals within our system, so those people don't then release just back out into the community. They're handed over to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement staff, and then they go through their process in one of their detention facilities to determine whether or not this person should or shouldn't remain in the United States, and they make that ultimate determination. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I've clarified. I don't think I need to go into much of the cost associated detail. I think that's provided to you by Representative Thatcher and Representative Flores. I wanted to make those small clarifications on how the formula actually works and what is being counted, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee members would have.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but when ICE takes somebody with on a detainer and they determine they should leave the country, do they then go through a formal deportation, not just send them back, but actually formally deport them so that if they return to the United States, they would be a felon just for coming back?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barker, I can honestly say I don't know much about the details once we've turned the individuals over to ICE. My sense is that they're required to go through the process that allows for whatever due process these individuals are entitled to in determining their resident status and their country of origin status. I don't know how the details of that process, but I believe that there is a process that they're entitled to at some point, and that's handled by ICE's people.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Max, you've got these people in here, they're illegals. Do they take part in the educational programs and the recovery programs the same as everybody else? And do they, specific with the people, Spanish-speaking people, if they can't speak Spanish, do you provide interpreters for them all the time so that they can take part in these programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krieger, it's a little complicated. I want to first point out that we don't make, again, I want to make sure the committee understands this, we don't make a determination. We're not legally authorized to make a determination as to the legal status of any of the individuals that we have within the system. So I can tell you where typically people have been born, and I can tell you typically whether or not they've got an ICE detainer placed on them. But we're not in a position legally to determine their actual legal status as to their right to be in the United States or not. That determination comes by ICE. What I can say is that people who have detainers of any sort factor into whether or not they participate in programs. We, as you've heard us testify on before in other policy-related issues, use a system that prioritizes people based on their criminal risk factors and a variety of other issues. But one of those issues that we prioritize on is the likelihood that you're going to release anytime soon. And the people who are close to release are the people who get the most intensive services as we try to appropriately affect their criminal behavior and transition them back into the community. Someone with a detainer on them that suggests that they're either going to be turned over to ICE or even a detainer of a United States citizen that says they're then going to go spend, for example, if they have a federal detainer that says they're going to go spend an additional number of years serving a federal sentence in a federal institution, is not somebody that we would prioritize for services because they're not close to release and it's not going to make much sense to invest our limited resources on those individuals. I will say, for the safety and security of the institutions and the operations of the institutions, we obviously make an effort to address issues of language barriers and the like so people fully understand what the rules are and how we have to operate the prison and what their responsibilities are going to be while they're serving inside so we can appropriately hold them accountable. And that does require us to have people on staff who are bilingual. And I will tell you that while Spanish and Spanish speakers is a large population of our bilingual population, as the information I think you've been provided attached to the letter from Mr. O'Leary points out, we have a wide variety of nationalities and a wide number of languages that are spoken as primary languages within the department, which requires us sometimes to have to find people who can communicate with individuals in a way that's appropriate so those people aren't being penalized for doing the wrong thing because they didn't understand how the process was supposed to work or what their responsibilities for being in prison are. So we do attempt to manage those issues appropriately.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Mr. Williams, for being here. I feel like maybe I work for you. I see you so often these days.
We'd be happy to put you on the payroll, Representative.
Yeah. The SCAP grants, it says that it reports the number of foreign-born inmates. If somebody was here and became a legal citizen but was born in a foreign country and then committed a crime, would they fall under this SCAP grant because they were born in a foreign country, although they're a legal citizen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron, they would. It is a sole measure of individuals who are foreign-born is what we report on the form. So their naturalized status wouldn't matter for purposes of reporting the numbers to on the SCAP grant.
Just to follow up, just so I'm clear then, so the ICE detainer is not necessarily going to be put on somebody who is a foreign-born but became a citizen. They wouldn't necessarily have an ICE detainer on them.
No, Mr.
you are making, or Department of Corrections is making the determination on the foreign-born inmates, and ICE is actually making the, or telling you which people have detainers on them. There are two different processes here, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron, that is exactly correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wisner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Williams, let me ask you a question or opinion. I've understood your testimony that the federal government makes this determination, but if that could be changed, would there be significant savings for the Department of Corrections if we had the authority to do that, and has that ever been challenged?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wisnett, I'm not aware that it's ever been challenged. I believe that in the issues of immigration and legal status of an individual citizenship, the federal government preempts the states in all ways in making those determinations. We can't have a separate test for legality of entry into the country or citizenship or any other test. If I'm remembering my preemption issues in constitutional law correctly. That being said, I don't believe that our determining that would make much difference with respect to costs associated with these areas, in part because the department's responsibility is to ensure that the sentence that's been imposed by the court that has sentenced this individual is fully carried out, regardless of their legal status or their citizenship. So whether they're a foreign-born, naturalized citizen, whether they're in the country legally but are now a criminal alien because of the crime they've committed, or whether they're an illegal alien who's committed a crime, our job is to ensure that their sentence is in fact carried out. There are a lot of due process requirements, as I understand, that are required in order to determine whether or not someone is or isn't in the country legally, and to make those establishments. And it wouldn't be something, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wisnett, that we would be wanting to take the responsibility to do. ICE does a nice job of figuring out who should and shouldn't have a detainer, and we let their judgment stand.
Thank you, Director Williams. Separate subject. I'm sure you attend conferences nationwide with directors of correction facilities. Can't we? There's no solutions. There's nothing coming up to actions or recommendations to address this, growing problem. We look at NCSL or other organizations. I mean, they come up with recommended actions by experts. I just can't believe this problem's continuing to grow. We don't seem to really have any suggestions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wisnett, it is, I think, a fair point of frustration shared by directors of corrections, I think, around the country with respect to the overall costs associated with the operations of their systems. Hemmed in on the other side, so obviously, I believe, is the statement by the Western governors that was attached to Governor Kulongoski's, Mr. O'Leary's letter, and the statement that's been made, as well as his willingness to recently sign that petition that went to Congress, I think is a clear indication of the state's general frustration around the issue of not getting an appropriate level of federal compensation for what is clearly viewed as an issue involving individuals who ultimately, a large number of whom, are not legally within the country. The challenge, I think, again, is to come back to the fundamental philosophy, however, that there is a belief that if an individual has committed a crime in Oregon and created an Oregon victim and has been sentenced by an Oregon court, that the only way to ensure that they serve their full sentence as that court was directed is to keep them in an Oregon prison. Who pays the cost of that, I think, is the policy question, and it's the one that I think the governors and the memorial that's been proposed here is suggesting to Congress needs to be addressed. But I have not heard, I can say, Representative, in the last 3 years, any new or great idea generated from any particular group or organization around how to cut the Gordian knot on this issue.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Williams, I believe we're also having a public hearing on HJM 20, which we haven't heard too much about, but that's the one that it address this, and I see Representative Lim just arrived, the issue of deportation to birth countries to serve the remainder of sentences. And when that happens, can we be assured that the person being deported is going to be serving the remainder of the sentence? Is there a way that we can assure that if somebody is deported, they will be serving their sentence? Or is that beyond our control once the deportation occurs?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bonamici, it is beyond our control, and it has been one of the reasons that policies of governors, current and past, have been not to pursue that line, because there is no guarantee that once you turn someone over to another country, even if you have some commitment that they would serve the balance of their sentence, there's no way to enforce that if those facts or circumstances change.
Thank you.
Director Williams, is there anything about the SCAP program that is an obligation of the federal government, or is this something they do as if out of their own largesse?
Mr. Chairman, I am not fully aware of the legal underpinnings of how the SCAP program works. I can tell you, generally, it's not included in the President's budget, and consistently has not been included in the President's budgets over a long period of time, and it's usually put back into the budget by Congress. I'm at least under the general understanding that the federal government has no legal duty to provide money through the SCAP program, but that but Congress recognizes the challenge this presents to the states and is at least setting some money aside. And there are other people probably better suited to answer whether or not there's a legal claim that could be pursued. And I know that that's at least some portion of the other bill that you're going to likely discuss here today.
In fact, we'll be hearing from Mr. Boss from the Department of Justice here shortly. So,
and they don't let me talk lawyer-like anymore, Mr. Chairman. I
will. I'm sure you probably have to restrain yourself. Any further questions? Thank you, Director Williams.
Thank you.
We appreciate your coming.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure seeing you all.
And I see that Representative Lim has come into the hearing room, who is the sponsor of House Joint Memorial 20. So, Representative Lim, if you'd come and just make some introductory remarks about this measure.
Mr. Chair, MacPherson, members of the committee, it seems to me routine to me see you almost every 2 days, if not every week. And I do appreciate the opportunity. John Lim, state representative from District 50, which is a Gresham area. It is my another privilege to appear in your committee to testify on this HJM-20. As you know, that our country and our state has people incarcerated in our prison system is the, if not the highest, one of the highest in the world. We need to recognize that. And if we continue to incarcerate more people in our prison system, locally, state, and nationally, we will have a big problem funding of this measure, including the aliens legally or illegally staying in our country. And sometimes we do not know what they are, where they are, what they are doing. This concerns me and concerns the citizens of this great state. Out of that concern, after some study and information, it is not, our state hands are tied on this issue. It is more that what we call ICE, Immigration and Custom Enforcement issue, instead of our local issue. But out of the concern, I think about it, thought about it, and begin to introduce SJM-20. The bill, the measure, memorial itself, very clear what it does. ways. And then in our state, we have, according to the information I have received from the Oregon Department of Corrections, we have 13,300 inmates incarcerated in our state. Out of that, 1,531 of them considered to be an alien. I'm not sure in this number whether this included incarcerated in the county that the prison system. And each of these inmates, if they are stayed, it could be average about $100 a day per person. And we just can't afford that in the future continually. Right now, we have about $175 million for the public defenders we are spending from our state general fund. About $15 million more than previous biennium. And let me assure you, this coming biennium again, it will increase at least another $15 million more, close to $200 million we have to pay for those people incarcerated in a prison system. We just cannot afford continually doing that. So this House Joint Memorial 20 is a good thing for our state, just urging Congress to work out each respective countries that we may send the citizens of respective each country, send it to their own country if they are staying in the illegally. Why do we need to that they pay for their stay in here? Of course, we got some problem that the we are not sure when they are released to each respective country where that they are going to enforce exactly the same sentence we impose on them in their country. Of course, we are not sure. But I think we can safeguard that with the agreement with each country, make sure they stay in their prison system. Chances are when they be their own country with their relatives and parents and hopefully children and spouses are there, chances are they come out better when they come out instead of keeping over here. Simply warehousing them in our prison system is not a good option. We know many citizens are concerned when they are released they could be come back. The chances are that are very difficult for them to come back. If they are especially from the other side of the ocean. And so I want you to know that the already California system working, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, the current governor of the California, he already made some headway on this issue. Especially I know, even last week, one of the Korean inmates sent to their own country after working with the federal government system. So I hope we could be the leader in this area, passing this House Joint Memorial and to the Congress. And this is the wake-up call for the federal government and the Congress to work on this issue as well as ours. I'm hoping we, the legislators, and the governor's office, hopefully, that seriously deal this issue, consider this issue, and then we might be able to send out some of the peoples that incarcerated to their countries. And according to the survey, I found out that the Cambodians, we got 4, Canada, we got 8, Cuba, 9, El Salvador, 5, Guatemala, 21, Honduras, 9, Laos, 10, Mexico, 804, Nicaragua, 4, Romania, 4, Russia, 6, Vietnam, 26, others, 100. So this is about the little more than 1,500 people incarcerated in our system, and we should be able to send some of those people to their country, except those people who have committed murder cases. So with that, I'm open to your questions.
Senator Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lim. Just for clarification, you had referenced a $100 per day incarceration piece. And Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Lim, earlier I had testified that $67 per day was the cost in our state correction system, and if I'm correct, the $100 that you cite is the local cost, and that higher cost, members, is as a result of some of the transportation to and from, in and out of their local facilities for court and other things. So it is an enhanced cost at the local level.
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Representative Flores, it is very difficult to pinpoint exactly how much it is. Considering the police works and court system, and most of them, maybe they might be using the public defender's cost, and plus some of the hardcore criminals, it could be $100, $200 a day. Some of them are not. So to me, I know it's according to this record, I have $64, $65, but that could be the lowest number. And then including, if we have to calculate federal government cost, it could be much, much higher. So I just want to put that record.
Representative Krieger.
I was looking at, Mr. Chair, on the fact page there, the figures you just, which people came from which countries. Other than Canada, I don't think we give any maybe direct aid to Canada, but all the rest of those countries, I'm willing to get federal aid from the government of the United States. It would be nice if they just take and reduce that aid per country for the amount that we're paying for incarceration and give it to the states to make up the difference what it's costing us. So just take it right out of their aid. That's where the federal government can get the money.
Thank you.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lim, thank you for bringing this forward. I was just looking at some of the other countries, and I noticed the Cambodians, and I remember a couple of those people are that are in prison, and they were young people who were actually, their families actually were boat people,
yes.
And they were babies in Cambodia, but grew up here and then committed some violent crimes, and so it would be very difficult to send them back to now Cambodia. I don't know how we would do that, but you have some good points. If our government could make an agreement, especially with Mexico or Central America, where we could ensure that people would serve a reasonable sentence. But we don't want, as you said, victims of serious crimes, of the serious violent crimes. I don't want them just getting out. If we just send them back and they're immediately released, they'll come right back, because they don't, if they get caught again, they'll be immediately released and there'd be no deterrent. And those are the kind of people we don't want back.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and the Vice Chair, the Barker, that is the very legitimate concern. When we are releasing certain people to their respective country, we need to consider the political implications when they go back to their own country, social and economic, and all the family factors has to be involved in it. So I'm not saying that all those incarcerated need to send it. We need to consider case by case. Certain cases, it could be good for the inmate and for their own country, and also saving a lot of tax dollars of ours.
Thank you. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to kind of follow up on Representative Krieger's idea of withholding on federal aid, I thought that maybe one option too, and just put this on the record, is if we could work out some agreement with some of those countries that are closer to us to send somebody down quarterly to inspect to make sure that those people are still incarcerated, and then send them the federal payments that we would get in lieu of keeping them here. That might be, or something like that. That might be an option too. That certainly it makes common sense to be able to work out some sort of agreement and have accountability that those people are still locked up.
Thank you very much. And then if I add a little more, including many other programs, the federal payout for this that the alien inmate continually dwindling while the major shares are putting on our shoulders to the state. And also one of the concerns I have, also the Major 11, the kids. You know, they could be just once in a lifetime when they were young, underaged, they made just one mistake in their life, and they are imprisoned more than minimum 8 years in the plus. And I'm lamenting those young kids who were under the Major 11. There's no chance they can come out from the prison system. There's no incentive at all. There is no leeway in the judge to make a lower sentence. Just the Major 11 kids, it's just a minimum 8 year sentence, and they have to stay. And even there is no their boot camp program for them to come out. Hopefully, including the Major 11, that the when we are releasing, especially if they are that alien, that hopefully we can work up some of the programs for them.
Members, I don't want to cut off questioning prematurely, but we do want to get Mr. Boss on and find out about the sort of legal theories on which one of these bills will be based. Is there a question?
I just was going to comment on the Major 11 crimes. That's constitutional. The voters have had a chance to reject that, and they approved it the second time with, I believe, 70% of the vote. I think that addresses serious, violent, person-on-person crimes. And the public, I don't believe, is willing to say that if a 250-pound 17-year-old kid rapes their 13-year-old son or daughter, that they should be let out early just because they're 17. I understand your concerns, but that's a very tough question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I agree with you, but some of the cases, the Major 11 kids, it is not talking about the rape cases, not talking about the rape cases, but some of the kids as a young people, sometimes they fight, use some of the other stick, whatever, and then they got the Major 11.
Yeah.
And so that case is what I'm talking about.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lim. We appreciate your coming by to present on this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, just one more thing. And I'm appearing in your committee several times, but none of my bills has a work session yet. I hope you do this one.
Okay, thank you. That's all. You've got it on the record, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Fred Boss from Department of Justice.
Thank you, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. My name, for the record, my name is Fred Boss. I am Chief Counsel of the Civil Enforcement Division of the Oregon Department of Justice. I do have some written materials that are being passed about. I'm here to testify concerning House Bill 2868 and have submitted written testimony. The Civil Enforcement Division is the division within the Department of Justice that is charged with recovering costs for the state of Oregon. So this bill would charge our division with getting these costs or recovering these costs from the federal government. The purpose of my testimony is not to resist the goals of the bill, but to illuminate the lack of success other states have had pursuing that goal through litigation. We have briefly reviewed this area, and I'm here to report just some of what we have found. Six states have filed suit to recover for costs of illegal aliens to the state: California, New Jersey, New York, Florida, Arizona, and Texas. All of these suits were dismissed at the trial level. All of the dismissals were affirmed by the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeals, including our own Ninth Circuit. The United States Supreme Court has refused to review any of these appeals. I have attached to my written testimony a report of the Colorado Attorney General on the Colorado Act, which is very similar to House Bill 2868. And I commend that report to you. It's very readable, and it gives a good analysis of the legal issues involved in suing the federal government for reimbursement of the costs of the state for illegal aliens. As Director Williams testified, there's also a federal act, the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, that offsets a certain amount of costs of incarcerating criminal aliens. This act is administered by the United States Attorney General, and the Oregon Department of Corrections does make an application and has received, I think, $3.4 million this the last budgetary year. I've included in my written materials some information on the SCAP program and the recoveries of the state of Oregon and the various counties for the last fiscal year. I would also like to say that under House Bill 2868, there would be a fiscal impact on DOJ. I do not have the figures now, but we are experienced in litigating with the federal government, and it is not something that is undertaken without some expense. Finally, House Bill 2868 does direct the Attorney General to take all necessary steps to pursue reimbursement from the federal government. This is a broad mandate, which, given the difficulty of seeking a viable legal remedy, may include other steps, such as intense lobbying of Congress, as recommended by the Colorado Attorney General in his report. Moving forward on the legislation, we may want to include other state officials in this bill to work towards that goal. The department would be happy to work with all concerned to accomplish the goals of this bill, given the legal difficulties involved. I'd be more than happy to take some questions.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Boss, for being here this morning. Is there anything that prevents, legally, that prevents Oregon to go out and strike an agreement up with another country such as Canada or Guatemala or Mexico to house our existing prisoners and go down and check and have an agreement to make sure they're there and give them payments to do that?
Chairman Pearson, Representative Cameron, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but the foreign policy is an area that is exclusively the domain of the federal government. And so I believe that there could be some difficulty because of the control of foreign policy, and I think this is a matter that may fall into foreign policy, is exclusively the domain of the federal government. That said, we certainly could research that, and that is just off from my knowledge of the area. That's my kind of off the top of my head response.
I think it'd be worth researching. If we can't get the federal government to do it, maybe we can. Oregon's been known to do some pretty wacky things before. Maybe this is something our citizens would like us to try.
Thank you, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank Representative Cameron for his comments. The chair and I, during last interim, discussed this. We heard these statistics reported to the interim Judiciary Committee that it would be better off to pay the other countries to house the prisoners, and then Representative Cameron today said maybe we could do the pass through of the money we're getting from the federal government, which is only 33%. I think this is really sort of a common sense approach. It's going to, we'd like to be paid, but it's probably not going to happen. So I think these are things that the Justice Department should look at to see if we have to look at the safety, and there's certain criminals where there's no victim. Maybe it's that we need to watch them, but I think it's a common sense approach. We're better to spend $5,000 a year than $60,000 a year, or something like that. We'd have to be sure that we had some way to be sure that they're staying in jail and serving their sentence, that they're not just taking the money and letting them go. But I think it's worth thinking out of the box and trying something different.
Uh, Mr. McPherson, Representative Wisnett, that's something we can certainly research the legal aspect.
Representative Krieger.
Just real quick, does anybody know the approximate costs, for instance, in Mexico to house a prisoner? I'll bet it's just a fraction of what we do it for costing us in Oregon. You could have a full-time employee down there of Oregon Corrections that just check weekly that they're there. You could still save millions and millions of dollars.
Mr. Boss, is that within your range of
interest? No.
No.
Should have asked Max.
Any further questions for Mr. Boss? Just to recap what I think was the key point here, Mr. Boss, what I'm taking from your testimony is that we would not expect to prevail if we were to sue the federal government under the, as required by House Bill 2868, to recover the cost, as to force them to pay more than they're paying now through the SCAP program. That'd be a fair summary of your conclusion.
Chair McPherson, correct, and not even limited to the SCAP program. Just in general, if the lawsuits that were brought against the federal government included constitutional theories and other statutory theories, all of which had failed. So it is not just simply litigating concerning giving more on the SCAP program, but giving more to handle this particular problem under any legal theory.
Right. So as between the two measures, that what one that would have us force the federal government to pay, and the other one urging the federal government to pay, asking might be better than insisting?
Chair McPherson, my testimony is that the forcing, we don't have the strongest hand.
I see. Representative Wisnett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Voss, why... in your report about Colorado, you state that no other state agreed to join them in their lawsuit. Did Oregon make that determination, and was it based upon cost? Is that their main?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, I did notice that in that report, and I am not aware of any contact from the Colorado Attorney General to our offices. I can certainly try and find out, but I personally am not aware of any.
But you assume that that would be the reason that states would not, because what you just told us, the cost of litigation was against the federal government, or not even?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, the cost and the futility.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Boss, also. And when she regains her voice, your testimony is primarily focused on House Bill 2868 and the language which says the Attorney General shall take all necessary steps to pursue reimbursement from the federal government for the cost of incarceration. So what are the necessary steps that have been implemented by the Attorney General's office to this point, if any? Or because I understand your comments in the context of, you know, could we do more? And I'm appreciating that. But are there steps that the AG's office has taken to this point to recover costs?
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, I'm not aware of any.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boss. Appreciate your testimony.
You.
I'd now like to invite Paul Snyder from the Association of Oregon Counties forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. Our organization has not yet taken positions on House Bill 2868, HJM 8, or HJM 20, but we certainly do appreciate the sentiments of the sponsors of the measures and the measures of members of the committee, and understanding and appreciating the cost to local governments of the incarceration costs for illegal immigrants. Representative Krieger has identified very well what the complicated nature of this problem is, and Representative Flores has done a very good job in identifying what the local government costs are. I can tell you that there was recently done a survey of the costs of operating the county jails in Oregon. It was completed just a couple of months ago, and the average daily cost is $103. Now, that's the average statewide. Many are more and many are less. But the discretionary funds of the counties, most of which go to public safety, the majority of the public safety costs of the counties are attributable to the county jail. So it is a big issue for the counties. It is a big expenditure for the counties, and we very much appreciate the sentiment expressed by these measures.
Mr. Snyder, let me understand the cost differences between the Department of Corrections average daily cost and the county jails. The figure I think that Representative Flores had mentioned, which is about the same magnitude I recalled for the DOC, is about $67 a day, and it's $103 in the jails. And what is it, because there are different things that are included in that calculation, or is it simply the economies of scale? What is it that accounts for that cost difference?
Mr. Chair, it's a combination of all those things. It has to do with first of all, with whether or not you count debt service. That's one issue. And I think the Department of Corrections, in reaching its $67 a day, does not. And debt service is a big factor. If it did, I think it would be over $85 a day. With respect to the configuration of the various facilities, some are more labor-intensive to operate than others. Certainly when you have a cell block configuration, you require a whole lot more in terms of corrections officers than you do if you have a dormitory kind of setting where you have someone centrally located who can see all the offenders in a large area. So that's an issue. I'm sure there are others as well, but those are the big ones that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Flores.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, transportation costs to and from facilities, court hearings, and so on,
yes.
It does aggregate that amount.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Barker.
Thank you. Mr. Snyder, how would the county know, I mean, if we're not really tracking, like, the immigration status, if somebody's arrested for drunk driving, how would we know that they're an illegal alien, or would we not? Or would we know that at all? Or, I mean, I'm just wondering how we would have any clue how many people are in county jails that might be available for an ICE detainer if we're not telling ICE to, or if they're not, if you call them and tell them, they don't bother coming down.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barker, I'm not the person to ask. I think it would be a sheriff. I'm sorry. I wish I knew the answer.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Snyder? Thank you very much.
Very much.
I'm now going to go through the other names that have been signed up on these bills in the order in which the sign-up occurred. David Cross.
Good morning. I'm David Cross, and I'm from Salem, Oregon. I'm just a concerned citizen. I've been following this issue of illegal immigration, and I was deeply concerned after reading the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, you know, the 2005 report that indicated that Marion County received $172,000. I thought, that can't be right. That couldn't have covered the funding of incarceration of criminal illegal aliens. So what I'm going to give you this morning is a report from just yesterday from Marion County Correctional Facility. What follows is information from March 13, 2000, taken from the Marion County Sheriff, Marion County Correctional Facility website for inmate offender information, full jail inmate roster. Total Marion County Correctional Facility inmates, 536. Total Marion County Correction Facility inmates held possession and delivery of meth, 83. Percent of Marion County Correctional Facility inmates held for possession and delivery of meth, 15.5%. Total Marion County Correctional Facility inmates with INS hold for March 13, 2007, 19. Percent of Marion County Correctional Facility inmates with INS hold amounted to about 3.5%. total Marion County Correctional Facility inmates with INS hold with possession or delivery of meth, 6. Percent of Marion County Correctional Facility inmates with INS hold possession delivery of meth, 31.6%. Representatives, I urge you to support the following legislation during the 2000 legislative session. House Joint Memorial 8, House Joint Memorial 20, and House Bill 2868. Now I'm going to speak apart a little bit from my written testimony. What got me interested in this is I had a family member 12 years ago, a brother, that got involved in meth and destroyed his family. When I found out three-quarters of the meth, is, according to the U.S. Justice Department, is coming across our southern border with Mexico, I thought, I got to do something. And I've written each and every one of you emails reporting from various counties and jails from Marion County, from Washington County, from Polk County and Yamhill County, giving you reports and emails. I love immigrants. My family was immigrants. My great-great-grandmother came to this country from Germany in 1872. I have part of my family came from Scotland. But the people here are not immigrants. They're criminal, illegal aliens. And many of them, up in Canby, you know, I heard of some of the gang activity up there. I talked to a police officer up there. He indicated that like 40% of the persons involved in gang activity were also involved in drug activity in the Canby area. I reported to you about up in Hillsboro where there was three guys that broke into a woman's house and murdered her. And it was to get, you know, money for meth. This is a problem. And this is not a partisan issue. It's an issue for each of you guys to hold hands and stand together to solve this problem. Our federal government has failed us. They have failed us. I understand we're a republic and states have rights. And you have the right to speak to our federal government and tell them what they should do. They're there to serve us, not just to serve themselves. So I urge you guys to work together on House Joint Memorial 8, House Joint Memorial 20, and House Bill 2868. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Cross?
Mr. Chair, I maybe it's not for Mr. Cross, but just some clarification. I'm looking at his detailed list here, and there's this bail. It says no bail INS hold. So does that mean that, and I'm just trying to find out how that works. So these people get arrested. They find out that they're here illegally. They're arrested for a crime, and then there is we hold them in our county jail until when? Anybody have the answer to that when it says no bail INS hold?
Representative Cameron, I don't have the answer to that. I invited Sheriff Ramirez to come here today and Jail Commander Choi to come and testify, people that are actually have boots on the ground.
Okay,
apparently they weren't able to make it. And I've wrote to the Yamhill County Sheriff Crabtree and invited him to come today. They just couldn't make it. Sometimes these hearings are real short notice, and it's real difficult. They're busy people. They're working hard.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cross.
I just wanted to thank him, too, for appearing and providing this data. I mean, you look at those numbers, and those are pretty convincing that we have a problem. Thank you, Bureau.
Thank you.
Rick Hickey.
Chair McPherson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Hickey. I am a resident of Salem, and I'm also the vice president of a nonpartisan group called Oregonians for Immigration Reform. What I've just presented to you is a recent federal Department of Justice report. The reason I wanted to give you that report is to prove to you that illegal aliens significantly recommit crimes over and over and over again. So the members of my group do support all three HJMs or bills that you're looking at, and we hope that you support them too. I noticed that one of those is to ask the feds to help reimburse us. They need to do that. Ask the Attorney General to help. And then that final one, to consider maybe deportation where they can, you know, complete their sentence in that country they came from. Nothing may discourage an illegal alien from committing a crime more than knowing that, A, he will be deported, he won't be given walking papers, which is what happens many times now, and not only that, he may have to serve his jail time in a third world jail, not an American jail, which for some of these folks they find it quite comfortable. This justice finding by the Department Inspector General Glenn Fine examined the arrest records of 100 illegal aliens arrested and then released by local and state authorities back in 2004. The startling number is of a sample group of 173 later went on to recommit up to 6 additional crimes each. If you look at the INS hold sheet that Mr. Cross handed you, you'll see that people are in there for repeat theft, repeat sex abuse, forced sodomy, unlawful sexual penetration, child molesters, heroin and meth, intent to distribute, possession of large quantity, aggravated assault, repeat DUI, and even murder. In May of 2006, to illustrate how this problem is growing, I looked at the ICE holds just in state prisons, not local and you know, not city and county. And back in May of 2006, we had 909 ICE holds just in our state prisons alone. Now that number, as Representative Flores illustrated, is over 1,000. So the number is growing significantly. I also hope that we don't wind up like California. I bring up California because it's our neighbor. And last year, they spent over $1 billion incarcerating and processing illegal aliens. And I know that's California, but in California, unlike Oregon, they cannot get a photo ID called a driver's license. So they have many reasons to flee the state of California besides the higher cost of living. We're also considering free health insurance for all children, whether they're illegal or not. That's another magnet for them to relocate to here. Free Head Start's another reason. They're doing ICE raids in California, unlike Oregon. Another reason that illegals will flee. And some of the local authorities, police departments, are also working with a program with ICE called 287G. This gets these people identified immediately and detained and removed by ICE within a very short period of time instead of giving them walking papers. Also, I want to remind everyone that federally there's over 29% of the inmates in federal prison are illegal aliens. So the members of Oregonians for Immigration Reform and myself support all three of these. We hope you do too. Yes, it's a federal responsibility. Obviously, they're lacking in that responsibility. And here, us Oregon taxpayers are paying millions and millions and millions of dollars for that. And somebody asked a question earlier about the ICE hold situation. I've called ICE and asked them previously, and their comment was, we do not have enough agents to go to every county, every city jail in the entire state of Oregon every other day and pick these people up. They don't have the resources. So the least that feds could do is at least give us some more money to deal with this situation. And yes, how much would it cost to jail them? I know the minimum wage in the country of Mexico is $287 a month. About 1/6 what ours is, so it would be easy to assume it would cost significantly less to house them in that country is one example. There's other countries, obviously, but one reason the feds can be reluctant is they have labeled us a sanctuary state. And one reason we are a sanctuary state is because of ORS 181, and this committee does have House Bill 2682 in your possession, and it'd be great for that to get a hearing and also for that to be considered, which would repeal some portions of that law. And we could show the feds, hey, we're not sanctuary anymore. We do want to cooperate. We do want to work with you. So maybe they'd be more encouraged to give us some more funding if that bill also was given consideration. Any questions? That's all I have. Thank you.
More in the nature of a comment, and thank you for your testimony. And one of the things frustrating, I know, to police officers is you're not allowed to ask. And then you get criticized later when somebody's arrested and it's a serious crime, and they say, you didn't advise this guy that he could call the consulate. And you're like, I'm not supposed to ask. Well, at some point you should have asked, and you're going to go. And that's very frustrating for the officers, and I think they would appreciate being able to help enforce the federal, you know, work with the federal constitution as well as the Oregon Constitution, both of which they're sworn to uphold. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barker. And a comment I'd add to that, one of the benefits of the 287G program is that it utilizes federal money. One thing about ORS 181 is not to use state funds regarding illegal immigration. Well, the 287G program uses federal funds, so it does help us that way as well.
Representative Flores.
And just to follow up, thank you, Mr. Chair, that discussion, we are hearing from a lot of current law enforcement officers with that very same frustration and would be willing to come give testimony on that bill. And thank you, Mr. Hickey, for mentioning that once again.
Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Thank you.
One more witness signed up, Art Crino.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Art Crino, C-R-I-N-O. I'm in House District 35. I'm a retired engineer. Twice today I've heard the comment that the federal government has dropped the ball. One of the details of that is NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, was passed in 1993 in the House.
Okay.
And then implemented in 1994. That allowed the large corporate farms in the United States to flood Mexico with produce. That devastated the Mexican agricultural industry, drove well over a million Mexicans off the farms and into the labor market, driving the average earned rate down between 10 and 20%. And that was one of the major incentives to double the numbers, approximately double, since NAFTA, the migration northward. And then concurrently, the federal government did not seal the border. So I believe that term that they have dropped the ball is quite accurate. And that is the extent of my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Crino. Are there any questions? Well, thank you for coming and presenting to us. But that concludes all the witnesses who signed up. Is there anyone else in the hearing room who would like to present on any of these three measures? Representative Wisnik, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we had a lot of material presented. I'm looking through the one at Max Williams, and I just saw that Oregon has used the Treaty of Deportation in a very small number of cases. I wonder if the DOC could come back or provide us examples of some background on those cases and how that works. As it says in the last page, Oregon has used the treaty in a very small number of cases when a potential candidate comes to their attention.
What page?
The back page of the Williams.
Mr. Chair, I can recall reading occasionally there would be some case of a terminal illness or something like that where they would allow somebody to go back, and maybe a family member or maybe the inmate themselves. And
it was a humanitarian, not so much as not a risk or a restitution issue.
Yeah, and I think those were carefully screened again, so it wasn't somebody who was a real risk that would just come back or something.
So maybe it'd be good to have a DOC provide us. You know, my point is, can we expand that? Is there opportunities to expand that program if they have done it?
Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, also, and I'm sorry that Mr. Boss already left, but the other, I think it was on page 3 of his testimony, number 2, transfer of criminal aliens to federal custody. I don't even know if we even touched on that to the degree that kind of raised. It sounds like there is a way or an option to push some of these people into the federal prison system. No? I mean, that's what this says.
I think those are cases where somebody, for example, may have robbed a bank, and then they robbed the 7-Eleven, and they go to prison here for the 7-Eleven. They'll detain it when their term is up here, then they take them for the federal crime, I believe is what most, that's usually where that comes in, where they have to actually commit a federal crime that they'll take them for.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that there was any opportunity for us to simply have force the federal government or induce them to take over the incarceration in their facilities of people who've broken our state laws. thank you, committee. We heard some, I think, a lot of interesting information here. I think that there are some leads here to pursue and to focus in on whether the particular proposals that we had before us today were the best way of getting at what is obviously a clear problem, which is that we have a lot of people who are here illegally and are not acting in accordance with our laws. They're committing crimes, and we need to deal with them in the most effective way we can.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Flores.
And if I just might take a page from Representative Lynn's book, I would just encourage that we bring back for further consideration and work session the House Joint Memorials, which is our expression of our encouragement to the United States Congress and the President that we need their cooperation and, in fact, request in very strongest terms their cooperation in addressing this issue.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your work on bringing this issue forward, Representative. Thank you, committee. We'll close the public hearings on House Bill 2868 and House Joint Memorials 8 and 20. That concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.